Welcome to Behind the Shield. My name is James Gearing, and this is episode 12 of the show. My guest this week is Rip Esselstein. Rip was a firefighter for the Austin Fire Department. He was a world-class triathlete and also was raised with a plant-based diet. Rip wrote a couple of books, Engine 2 Diet, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, and My Beef with Meat. So in this episode, we talk about nutrition, specifically the plant-based diet. Removing meat from your diet obviously has been pretty demonized by our society and, you know, kind of frowned upon vegetarians and vegans. But again, there's no real substance behind that. So this episode serves to kind of educate on, you know, the reasons of a plant-based diet. I actually tried it myself for a while, fell off the wagon a tiny bit, but I have to say I felt pretty damn good and probably just need to make some adjustments on it to continue to do that. So Rip explains what it is, explains some of the pitfalls and some of the problems that people might find. But the real focus of this for me was the disease reversal side. His dad and his father's partner spearheaded the movement of using nutrition to reverse disease, whether it's heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, and even some cancers. They showed that by changing your diet, you can actually reverse those completely, despite us being told they are quote unquote irreversible. So between the general health and the disease reversal, we talk about some pretty amazing things. And he's a wealth of knowledge in those areas. So without further ado, I introduce to you Rip Esselstein. So I have been a fan of your work and your father and Dr. Campbell's work as well. I was blown away. I think it was really, really the pivotal point of the way I eat now and the way I think about nutrition. Forks Over Knives is definitely give credit to them for that. I mean, it really opened my eyes. But so what was it like early on when you were very young? That was pre-China study time, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. The China study didn't come out until 2005. And, So early on, I mean, I started eating this way, James, probably in 1987-ish is when I went, you know, full kale into this lifestyle. And I've been getting whiffs of it for about 3.5-4 years because my father started his research at the Cleveland Clinic back in 1984 to start this research to show that you could actually metabolize away the plaque formations in your arteries simply by making some really profound and very noteworthy dietary changes, you know, mainly eliminating all meat byproducts, and really, you know, being careful on the processed refined foods and really focusing in on a whole foods plant-based diet. And then really the rest is history. You know, he's been able to show again and again and again and again through before and after angiographic evidence that the human body can do just this. You can reverse the plaque formations and of this disease that's taking almost 51% of our lives, whether you're men or women. And then I graduated from the University of Texas at Austin in December 1986. And now I was no longer eating on the, I was there on a swimming scholarship. And so I was eating on the, at the athletic, training room kind of dining table with the football players and the basketball players. And it was incredibly unhealthy stuff. You know, it was chicken fried steak and cheese pepperoni pizza and, you know, hamburgers and bacon and eggs and soft serve ice cream and, you know, everything that you just absolutely love, but it's not loving you back and it's not, you know, fueling you to the best of your abilities or giving you the performance, taking your performance to the next level. So when I got out, I immediately started cooking for myself and following more of my father's protocol. And then a guy named Dave Scott, who was six-time winner of the Hawaii Ironman Triathlon, and he was a hardcore vegetarian, you know, didn't do any animal products, did a little bit of dairy. So I was convinced that for health and for performance reasons, this was the way to go. So, yeah, I started in 87. And it's amazing. I mean, there weren't that many books that were out there. You know, John McDougall had his books that were out there. I think Dean Ornish had written his book on reversing heart disease. And then you had Colin Campbell in 2005. My father wrote his in 2007, Preventing and Reversing Heart Disease. And then I wrote mine in 2009, The Engine 2 Diet, based upon what I did at Station 2 with a bunch of Texas male firefighters.
Yeah, it's really sad when you look back and you have been educated about food and you see the results, how you can reverse disease. And you look back and you see, A, how you were advised to eat, you know, by your government, by your school, and then also how the medical community was telling you that these diseases were irreversible. I know it makes me angry, really, to look back and see the misinformation. I know some of it was through research, but as I say in pretty much every episode of the podcast, this isn't really so much about education in brand new groundbreaking technology or theories. It's really breaking down the misinformation that we've been given and going back really to how we used to eat, how we used to exercise, you know, 100 or so years ago.
Yeah, it's it's really amazing when you look back over the last 50, 75 years, how we've been so basically marketed to death, that thinking that, you know, we need meat for, to be real men and to grow muscles and to be strong. We need dairy for strong bones and a strong body. And the reality is, you know, that meat is actually, it's a very weak food. It's not a strong food source. It's a problematic, insidiously destructive food, whether it comes from red meat, chicken, fish, pork, you know, anything that contains muscle basically contains these actually disease promoting substances, whether it's the dietary cholesterol that we don't need any of. Our liver produces all we need naturally, so we don't need to take in an extemporaneous source, whether it's the saturated fat, again, that we don't need saturated fat. I mean, the absolute preponderance of the scientific research and evidence is crystal clear that saturated fat, it promotes heart disease, it promotes type 2 diabetes, it promotes major cancers. And so, you know, this whole paleo thing, the whole, you know, eat more fat, you know, weigh less, it is it's pulling at America's heartstrings in a way that is, unfortunately, it's more marketing than it is science, and it's getting everybody confused. But, you know, the fact that, you know, meat, again, I'll go back, it's a weak, problematic food. And aside from the cholesterol and the saturated fat, you also have weak, destructive animal protein. And most people are clueless that animal protein is somehow something that we want to be careful of and avoid. But the reality is, it's of a composition and proportion of the essential amino acids that actually wreaks havoc on our bodies. It inflames our arteries. It sucks calcium out of our bones because it's too high in the sulfuric containing amino acids. It's really harsh on some of our major organs like our kidneys and our liver, and it raises cholesterol levels. So you want to run, not walk away from animal protein, whether it's, you know, a piece of meat or whether it's it comes from dairy, whether it's meat, whether it's cheese, I'm sorry, whether it's milk, whether it's cheese, whether it's yogurt, whether it's ice cream, you know, cottage cheese, sour cream, any of these things. They're basically just a different form of meat. And I like to say that milk is liquid meat, that cheese is hardened meat, that yogurt is runny meat, that ice cream is frozen meat, because they basically contain the same animal protein, animal cholesterol, and animal fat. And it, as you know, James, if you've read the China study, dairy products, actually the protein in dairy, the primary protein that comprises about 86% of the protein, comes from casein, C-A-S-E-I-N. It's a growth accelerator, and it's put there in the baby, in the mother cow, to help really grow that baby cow as fast as possible. And it was never meant for a human being. It's baby calf growth fluid. It was not meant for us. We're the only mammals that drink another mammal's milk. And we drink it like it's, you know, like it's this health elixir. And it basically just, it ignites tumors and cancers and fuels heart disease and diabetes. So we want to get everything. We want to get everything. We want to do the deep dive in nutrition, and we want to get it from plants. And anyway, I'll stop for a sec and we can go into why, but you want to avoid the animal products and the animal byproducts.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to interject, my own personal story. I went completely plant-based. I added a little bit of meat into my diet, and I'll explain why in a moment, but it totally, even then, it completely changed the way I eat now versus how I ate before. But touching on the milk first, I grew up on an English farm where the milkman would come in a little battery-powered car and drop off a crate full of milk that sometimes would be cold, sometimes would be half yogurt by the time we got there, and it was disgusting. But it was, to me, it was like water. So I would literally drink a pint of milk, you know, with every meal. I'd down a pint after I'd been out playing in the fields and or working when I was older. And drank milk my whole life. I also had really bad problems with my stomach my whole life. It was labeled IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, or otherwise known as I don't know what the hell is going on by a doctor.
Right.
And so we're talking all the way up until I'm 42 now, until I was 39. And when I was 39, I went to the plant base and I removed dairy from my diet. I can say, hand on heart, almost overnight, my bowel, you know, movements and the cramps and everything changed immediately, absolutely immediately. And ever since then, I've been sworn off dairy. A thing that, you know, when people ask, firstly, for me, it's personal experience. And that's what this whole podcast is about. It's not about trying to persuade every person that listening to every podcast to do exactly what the guest says or what I say. It's immersing everyone into all this knowledge and then letting them pick out the things that they, you know, works for them. And this absolutely worked for me. But the other couple of things that I thought were very poignant, firstly, was the fact that not only is the cow another species, but it's a ruminant and has four stomachs. And then secondly, that I think you guys mentioned in some of your work, how even the calf becomes intolerant, which is what forces them to start eating grass. So if the own species own baby doesn't tolerate it, then why do we think that we do?
Right, right. Well, it's interesting. Like, you know, almost 70% of human beings are lactose intolerant. You know, when you're babies, you have the right enzymes and everything where you can handle, you know, your mother's breast milk. But then as we get older, we lose that ability, or at least 70% of human beings do. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how 99% of people walking around on the street think that they need milk for calcium and for strong bones, and that it does a body good. And, you know, you look around the world, you know, whether it's the UK, United States, Norway, Sweden, Great Britain, the greatest consumers of dairy products on the planet, they have the greatest incidence of osteoporosis and hip fractures. So, you know, the reality is that milk is not a good source of absorbable calcium. It's a really lousy one. And that's because the animal, the protein, that sulfuric containing protein in all dairy products, trumps your body's ability to actually store that calcium, because your body's got to basically buffer that acid load. In order to do it, it's got to draw calcium from your bones. So it's just completely ass backwards that we're trying to, you know, get our calcium from this really second class vehicle that wreaks havoc on us.
Yeah. And I know the only thing that's really been shown to improve osteoporosis, and again, you know, lo and behold, it's very, very easy, but you can't get rich on it, is exercise. And I remember back in London when I was in university doing sports science, you know, 2 decades ago, they were showing studies of, for example, the cyclists who had great bone density just in their wrists where they were load bearing on the handlebars, but that circular motion wasn't giving them impact in the rest of their body. So resistance training, the exercise that everyone's terrified of, the throwing the weights around, that kind of thing, has been shown. And you can have the same change in muscle density and bone density, whether you're 18 or 80. But it's just putting that out there is, you know, sacrilege. But drinking milk, you know, having a little milk mustache is fine.
Well, you know what? You bring up a good point. And, you know, I tell people, if you want to get strong bones, there's a number of things you want to do. And the first thing you want to do is, like you just said, you want to do some sort of weight bearing exercise, because, you know, your bones, they are living, you know, they're like, it's like a, almost like a living tissue. And in order for them to get strong, you've got to stress them, just like, you know, just like your muscles. Otherwise they're going to become, you know, very, very weak. You want to stop eating animal products. You want to start eating, you know, a nice plant strong diet. You want to stop smoking. If you smoke, smoking's awful on your bones. And you also want to, you got to be careful on the sodium and also the soda pops. But, you know, that's like 5 things that you want to do to bring your bones back.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, the osteoporosis here, and I'm sure it's the same back home, I just haven't been in the medical world back in yeah. England. But, I mean, it's crazy. And then you get these poor elderly people that fall, and relatively young too. And we're talking 60s and 70s. And as anyone in EMS knows, once someone fractures a hip or a femur, a hip or a pelvis, then most of them don't ever recover. I think the average lifespan is about 2 years after that. So they're basically signing their death warrant once they fall with that their bones in that state.
Yeah, it's not pretty. Yep.
So moving on to the meat now. Before we go into you know, what, for example, what I eat and what I don't, and you know, your philosophy on not eating it at all. I'd really like to delve into the whole concept of reversible disease. This was another thing that blew me away when I first watched, Forks Over Knives, and I delve into the China study and Superjuice Me and all these other ones that have shown the same things. All right, but let's touch on heart disease first. So, when people get heart disease, they go to the cath lab. When they have enough, you know, caths and they fail, they get a bypass, and then pretty much, you know, they're waiting to die. Your father and Dr. Campbell's work showed angiograms of full occlusions of the arteries in the heart, and then going on a plant-based diet with no other meds, and correct me if I'm wrong, after X amount of months, you saw an angiogram of an almost completely open artery again without any bypass or any caths. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, you can actually go to my father's website, Dr. Esselstyn, and that's spelled ESSELSTYN.com, DrEsselstyn.com. And then under, I think it's under research, scientific research, you can see the before and after angiograms of, I don't know, I think he's maybe got 6 to 8 up there. And some of the most powerful reversals that he's shown were done without any statins, without any, you know, any procedures or anything. The only prescription was a whole food plant-based diet.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, and that's another, you know, thing that we're told. And it breaks my heart because I see these people in the back of, you know, my rescue when I'm on that day. And, you know, they believe it wholeheartedly that they're done for, you know, and they're waiting to die. And I try and impart some sort of kind of seed of knowledge, but obviously in a 10-minute transport when I'm trying to do a whole bunch of other things, convincing someone to turn to a plant-based diet is not really very effective. But I always try and at least kind of tell them, hey, you know, there's this movie, go watch Forks Over Knives when you get out of hospital, just see if that sows a seed. Diabetes is another one. I mean, again, everyone, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, they assume that they're going to be on this medication the rest of their life because it's irreversible. A doctor told them. What's your views on that?
Well, so type, you know, there's you have type one and type two, and type one is, you know, it's a different animal where you're no longer producing insulin. And so you really have to take the insulin shots and you'll be a type one for the rest of your life, but you can improve the insulin, your insulin sensitivity. So you're actually having to use a lot less insulin throughout the day by incorporating a whole food plant-based diet. But when it comes to type 2 diabetes, which is really a lifestyle-created disease, absolutely 100% people can reverse this. You know, James Anderson, 25 years ago, showed this. Dr. Neil Barnard most recently showed this at George Washington University. He's written a number of books on the topic. Joel Fuhrman has written a book about it. You know, my father in Forks Over Knives took that one patient and was able to reverse her diabetes in 3 months. And I lead these seven day healthy eating immersion programs with a lot of people that are pre-diabetic and type 2 diabetic. And in 7 days, we're ratcheting them off their medications. We're reducing their oral medications. And then, you know, a month or two out of the immersion, they have actually 3 months out, they've reversed their diabetes. You know, their A1C has gone from 9, 10, 11 to under 6. I think it's under 5.8 officially means you're diabetic free. And it's really just, it's a function of starting to eat a low fat, whole foods, plant strong diet where you allow your almost, you know, 50 to 100 trillion cells in your body to metabolize away the excessive fat that is basically lodged in there so that the insulin can now do its job to open up the cell door and escort the sugar in. Otherwise, you know, basically you got this backlog of sugar in your system because all that excessive fat is keeping the insulin from doing its job. So it's an easy solution, but you know, people just aren't being told what to do, and they're doing insulin, they're doing oral medications, they're eating a diet that is high in fat, that as opposed to one that, you know, has all kinds of great unprocessed carbohydrates. In the diabetic world, like, carbohydrates are a bad word. And the reality is, as long as they're unprocessed carbohydrates, that's the secret right there. That's the golden ticket. So I'll stop for a sec.
No, you're fine. I think that's a very, very, very good point to underline. People look at their plates like, oh, I need to get some carbs on there now, but it's loaded with vegetables. It's like, well, you have carbs on there. You know, you have amazing, you know, sources of carbohydrate. You don't need a refined starch, which is basically powdered sugar in the form of a potato or rice or worse, you know, pasta or really refined bread. And even if you take it a notch down, I like to use the Ezekiel bread every morning. But it's basically a bunch of seeds crammed together. And I find that, you know, great as a substitute for a pseudo bread, because you can tell it releases slowly. It doesn't give you that insulin spike.
Yeah. And just to, you know, set the record straight, you know, James, we're Engine 2, you know, we're fans of bread and pasta and potatoes and rice, but we just want to make sure that they are as unprocessed as possible. So we want 100% whole grain bread. Most people don't know how to read a label. They don't know how to find a nice, you know, 100% whole grain bread. Most of the bread out there is it comes from, you know, bleached flour and all kinds of, you know, junk. Most people don't know how to, you know, eat a whole grain pasta. They're doing refined pasta. When it comes to rice, you know, the majority of the population is doing white rice as opposed to wild rice or brown rice or other whole intact grains, you know. And then when it comes to, you know, beans, where we love beans. I mean, beans are amazing and they're just filled with so much fiber and energy and protein. But I just want to, you know, let you know and let your audience members know that we're not opposed to pasta and breads and things of that nature. We just want to make sure that they're whole grain.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting with the beans as well. I know the strict paleo, and I think a lot of the paleo community now, I know you're obviously opposed to the meat side, but The strict one was also against the legumes, which I thought was kind of crazy too, because again, I think beans are a great source of protein and a great addition to most recipes.
Oh, I mean, listen, beans are amazing. And if you're eating a completely 100%, you know, what I refer to as plant strong diet, you definitely want to incorporate beans. They're such a great course, source of calories, of fiber, of phytonutrients, of antioxidants, of, you know, they're, you know, your average bean is 25% protein. They're filled with all kinds of flavor. They're, you know, they got a nice meaty texture to them. And I find beans add a fair amount of heft and just substance to my meals, whether it's rice and beans, whether it's, you know, beans that are part of a casserole. I throw a can into, you know, my salads. You know, you blend them up and you make a great bean dip. But you know, the whole paleo notion that beans are a problematic food, they're anti-nutrients, that they, you know, suck nutrients you know, from your body, it's really hogwash. What it is, you know, there's things called phytates and lectins that are in beans and in different grains. And but as soon as you heat them up to, you know, over about 120 degrees, they die, they go away. And they're basically they've now been neutralized. So, you know, that argument is does not make sense.
No, I mean, I think, again, it's one of those things where I think in 2016, there are so many blooming research papers and people are researching the craziest stuff and researching, you know, you'll see it on the news flash, you know, breaking news, if you exercise, you lose weight. And someone's actually being paid for a study to do that in 2016. And I think that the self-experimentation is really what needs to go on. You know, try beans. If beans make you really sick, then don't eat beans. You know, if meat is making you ill, then don't eat meat. But I think just following the directions of the latest, you know, research or the latest craze, religiously or blindly, I guess you could say, will set you up for failure. But if you go in thinking, I'm going to try this and see how I feel, regardless of what anyone else says, I think that's the key.
Yep.
So, and it's just touching on the food as well. So, one thing that I'm really trying to push as well, and it's crazy because it's another thing that's almost, you know, heresy when you talk about it, is shopping from your local farmer's market. When you talk about the, you know, the unrefined breads and the vegetables and those kind of things, it's incredible how inexpensive it is to buy organic food and vegetables and, you know, homemade breads and those kind of things in your local farmer's market. And I would love to see a push towards that and away from, you know, the super refined box foods that get shipped 2,500 miles to a middleman grocery store.
Yeah. Do you want me to comment on that?
That's okay. No, I guess I was kind of answering the whole question myself. All right. So what I wanted, let's move on to how you got into the firefighting, and then we'll transfer to the engine 2 after that. So, sure. So what were you doing prior to joining the fire service?
Yeah. So prior to joining the fire service in 1997, I was a professional triathlete, and so I you know, was swimming, biking, and running for a decade. I went to the University of Texas on a swimming scholarship, and, you know, I've always loved sports and competing and you know, pushing my body. And so when I graduated from UT, University of Texas at Austin, the thought of getting a 9-to-5 desk job was just, you know, revolting to me. You know, no fiber in my being could do it. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to give this triathlon thing a whirl. And I started training and I started, you know, doing pretty well in the races. And that first year, by the end of the first year, I moved from, you know, competing as an age grouper to getting my my pro license. And then my first pro race I did was the Chicago International Triathlon. There were 4,000 competitors and I ended up getting ninth place and winning $600, and I was on my way. And then from there, I just, you know, I became probably the premier open water swimmer in the sport, one of the top two open water swimmers in the sport, and became one of the top 10 international distance triathletes in the United States. International distance is it's a 1.5 mile swim, a 40K bike, and then a 10K run. So it took like anywhere between an hour and 48 minutes and an hour and 52 usually to do that.
Okay. And you were plant-based the whole time?
Plant-based the whole time. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yep. So you are able to perform as an athlete on a plant-based diet.
Oh yeah. And let me tell you, I think more and more athletes are going to be finding out that, you know, if you want to have an immune system like a Canadian moose, if you want to recover better than you've ever recovered, if you want to perform at your ideal weight, if you want to take in the cleanest burning fuel you can ever imagine, you're going to want to find the power of the plants. Whole food, plant-based foods, it's where it's at.
Okay, so let's touch on them because I forgot we didn't even talk about the meat side yet. So if you wouldn't mind, give the audience kind of the cliff notes of the results of the China study and where that led your father and Dr. Campbell health-wise as far as advising nutrition.
Yeah, and so basically the China study was, it was probably the most amazing epidemiological study that's ever been done. And it took place in 65 counties in rural China, and where they basically were able to track where the preponderance of the heart disease was and the cancers. And there was a direct correlation as far as the provinces and the counties that were eating more animal products and more dairy products had higher rates of cancer and heart disease and diabetes. And the ones that didn't, there was virtually like little to none of these diseases. And there was one area, I think it was 150,000 people in this one province, and they didn't have one case of heart disease, not one. And of course it was a province that ate all plant-based. But the moral of the story is that, you know, meat, dairy products, processed refined foods have the building blocks that promote these chronic Western diseases. And the extent that you can remove these foods from your diet and replace them with fruits and vegetables and whole grains and beans, the better off you're going to be. So there you go.
Right. Yeah. And the other example I used in Folks Over Knives that I thought was very interesting was the Norway during the Nazi occupation, how the heart disease was somewhat high. And then the Nazis came in and confiscated all the livestock for the soldiers. And during those, I think it was 5 years, the heart disease began to fall and fall and fall. And then after Norway was liberated by the Allies, it started to climb again.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it was a very powerful message. And again, I think, you know, you don't need to do a study sometimes. Just look at, you know, the effects and figure it out for yourself. So let me see. So, well, we've talked about the triathlon. So before we get to Engine 2, so when did you go from being a professional triathlete to joining Austin?
So in about 1985, I was kind of like getting rumblings that it was time for me to kind of move on and find another career path. And I had some friends that were age group triathletes, and they're like, "Rip, man, you should consider joining the fire department. It's just, you know, it's an amazing culture. You go on these amazing calls. No two shifts are ever the same." And I was enthralled with it. I did a couple rideouts, and I was like, "Man, I want in." And it took me almost 2 years to get on board with the Austin Fire Department. It was just, you know, some fire departments, there's, you know, like the first year I applied to try and get on with Austin, there were 4,000 applicants applying for 12 spots, right? Brutal.
Yeah.
But I finally got on after, I think it was 2.5 years. And it was 1997. And when I after I finished the 6 month long academy, the first 4 months were fire suppression. The last 2 months were where we all got our EMT. I went out to Fire Station 1, which is considered the animal house of the of the Austin Fire Department. It's located in really the heart of downtown Austin, and you got two engines that run out of there, a ladder company, and an EMS ambulance. So at any one time, you got 18 to 20, usually all guys there. So it was a testosterone fest.
And how was that received when you first went to the station and you proclaimed that you didn't eat meat? Did that go down well?
Well, I never proclaimed anything. I just tried to do my own thing, right, and stay on the down low. But people notice how you eat, absolutely. And a lot of times we have wagons where everybody is invited to eat dinner together. And so I would eat with everybody, but I usually do my own thing. And I got teased and ridiculed mercilessly, but I was 33 when I got on board, and so I had a pretty thick skin, and I refused to be ruffled or intimidated to eat weak food, and so I held tight to my guns. I remember one guy leaning over me the first week and said, the last vegetarian that came through here didn't last 2 months. And I just smiled and, just said, well, all right. And then I was at Fire Station 1 for my first about 3.5 years. And then I transferred to Fire Station 2 in, I think it was the beginning of middle of 2001. It wasn't too long after 9/11. And then I spent the rest of my career at Fire Station 2, which was near the University of Texas campus, and a really great, great one horse fire station. We had one engine there.
Right. So real close family in that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So one of your members of your fire family in that station was having some health issues, and that led you to get together and do something about it. So can you tell that story?
Yeah, we had a little bar bed out on the porch one night to see who had the lowest cholesterol, and as firefighters are, you bet and you follow through on that bet. And so the next morning we drove to the lab in the unit, and we got pricked, and his cholesterol was 344 milligrams per deciliter, which is ridiculously high, and you typically want a cholesterol between most Americans have a cholesterol between 200 and 250, and most Americans will die of heart disease. And JR is at 344. He was in a bad place. We found out that his great grandfather and grandfather both perished from heart disease before the age of 51, and his dad at 51 had quadruple bypass. So he was not on a good trajectory, and he ate a lot of fried, nasty, unhealthy food. And so we kind of huddled up and we talked about going plant strong as a unit at Fire Station 2 to really save this guy's health. And so we did it, and it became a way of life for us at Fire Station 2 for almost 6-7 years. And it was interesting because when we had openings, when somebody would promote or retire, or they get injured and they have to go to dispatch or something like that, we'd have a stack of firefighters that wanted in. They wanted to come to this station where they knew that we worked out every afternoon. We ate plant strong for lunch when we came in, dinner and breakfast the next morning. Our shifts are noon to noon, so we come in at noon and we get off at noon the next day. We're 24 on, 48 off. And we started making just whole grain pancakes, obviously without eggs and without oils. We did migas especiales using tofu and onions and mushrooms and corn tortillas and salsa. We would do we'd make great, you know, these mighty muffins made with lots of bananas and ground flaxseed meal and ground oats. We would do steel cut oatmeal, lots of fruit. For lunch, we do, you know, red lentil sloppy joes. We do big old burritos with rice and quinoa and different beans and veggies. We do big old muscular salads with everything you can imagine in there: roasted Brussels sprouts, artichoke hearts, beans, romaine lettuce, kale, spinach. We do sweet potato lasagnas with a nice crushed cashew topping instead of cheese. We do pizzas with all kinds of, you know, customized toppings, whether it was sun-dried tomatoes or black beans or caramelized onions. We play around with different sauces. Sometimes we do a barbecue. Sometimes we do a spinach hummus. Sometimes we do a clean marinara. We would even roll our own whole grain crusts at the fire station, you know, and hope that we wouldn't have a call that would take us out. We'd make our own burgers from scratch with beans and rice and oats as the foundation. We do sorbets made from fresh fruit that we just put in the Vitamix or the blender. We do rice and beans extravaganza. We could feed a hungry house of six firefighters for about $16, and everybody likes, you know, to eat on the cheap. And I tell people that this is the drop dead most economical way to eat on the planet. And it really is. It's peasant food, you know, rice and beans and potatoes and bananas. Nothing about this way of eating has to be expensive.
No, that's definitely always a bone of contention when the guy says he'll cook dinner and it costs $15 a head. So you guys ate like that for a certain amount of time. And what was the effect on JR's blood work?
Oh, yeah. So JR's cholesterol in 26 days, it came down to 196. So it came down like 148 points in less than a month.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think he lost like 14 pounds and, you know, increase in energy and just, you know, all the fun stuff that happens when you eat clean food.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, when I went plant strong 3 years ago, my blood work was always good because I'd always watch what I eat and I was raised on a farm. So I kind of had that education of where my food should be coming from, what it should look like. But I still, you know, I wasn't eating as clean and I still had meat in my diet and certainly not, you know, grass fed, free range, that kind of meat either. And when I went and had I got hired. So I did blood work to get hired. And I want to say the first physical to sync with everyone else was about 6 months after that. And the doctor said he'd never seen blood work as good as that. And could I teach him how to eat?
How about that?
Yeah. So that's a testament. Yeah, absolutely. By far. So the reason why I personally put a little bit of meat in my diet is as self-experimentation, I felt like I was missing something. And it may be that I hadn't come across that in the plant world yet, but I kind of felt like I was weak. And I know one of the places that is hard to meet in the plant-based diet is B12. And I was taking supplements for that. And I don't know if it was that or not, but throwing a little bit of meat, and I only have some. Normally I'll do tofu or do beans, but every so often I'll do a small piece of meat, but I will make sure it's the cleanest, you know, healthiest, most humanely raised meat I can find. But so I'm sure you've had that before. So have you any idea on what element a lot of people are missing when they give you feedback like that?
Well, you know, the reality is when you start eating a whole food plant strong diet, you're getting more of everything that you need. So let me talk about that first, and then we'll come back to you maybe feeling like you were a little bit lacking in energy or sluggish or whatever, however you described it. But you start eating this way, all of a sudden, you're not taking in any of the nonsense that you were taking in when you're eating dairy products and meat. You know, I mean, you're not taking in the cholesterol. You're not taking in the saturated fat. You're not taking in the weak animal protein. You're no longer taking in, you know, these heterocyclic amines that are formed when you cook meat, that basically are, you know, like cancer promoting substances. You're no longer taking in, you know, boatloads of insulin-like growth factor number one that is a tumor and cancer promoter. You're no longer taking in carnitine or that creates that's in all, you know, all meat and all dairy that basically creates something called trimethylamine oxide that is a substance that it's a hellish molecule that basically makes your cholesterol that much more prone to stick on your artery walls. You're also not taking in hem iron, which is the iron that you get when you, you know, eat meat because it's in the blood of the animals, which increases oxidative stress. You've got zero fiber in meat and dairy products, and fiber is absolutely so essential to just a jillion things, and it goes way, the benefits go way beyond your rear end. You know, everything from stabilizing blood sugar to, you know, removing toxins, decreasing your chances of different cancers, especially colorectal cancer. But fiber is amazing. So when you're eating meat, you're taking in all this stuff, and you're not getting fiber, and you're not getting antioxidants. You're getting some, but know that when you're eating plants, you're getting roughly 64 times more antioxidants than you ever could in meat and dairy. You're getting phytonutrients that basically are these plant nutrients that are only found in plants, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30,000 of them. That and their job is basically to, you know, slow down aging, go in and zap free radicals that are responsible for, you know, creating all kinds of, you know, havoc in our bodies. And as firefighters, as athletes, as human beings, you know, we create a lot of oxidative stress in our bodies. And so again, the best way to neutralize that oxidative stress is with the power of plants, your green leafy vegetables, your sweet potatoes that contain all those amazing colors, your corn on the cob, your honeydew melons, your mangoes, your strawberries, your butter beans, your black beans, your pinto beans, your whole intact grains, whether it's brown rice, whether it is farro or barley or wheat berries or quinoa, all these things. So, you know, plants are where it's at. Now, when it comes to – now I'm going to get into some of the specifics in B12. When it comes to vitamins, James, let me put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
Do you know how many vitamins there are that we need to get as human beings?
My guess is that we've only scraped the surface and we don't know how many vitamins there are.
Okay. Vitamins. I love the way you pronounce that. Vitamins. So the reality is there's 13. There's only 13 vitamins, right? And of those 13, 11 of them come from plants. The only two that don't come from plants, that aren't manufactured in from plants, are vitamin D, which is, you know, the sunshine vitamin. Actually, vitamin D is more of a hormone, and so you need that sunshine to kind of activate it. And then the last one, the 13th one, is B12, which you mentioned. And, you know, B12 does not come from animals and it doesn't come from plants. It comes from the ground. It comes from microorganisms in the ground. Now, yes, you can get B12. You know, we used to get it from plants all the time when we, you know, ate some dirt that was on our plants. But because everything's so sterile and you know, it's clean, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, we're not getting our B12 from our plants like we used to. Now you can get some from animal products, but that's because the B12 is basically, you know, the cow or whatever it eats it when it's eating its grass and it gets dirt in itself, and the B12 basically then is clinging to the muscle tissues. But that is not a good excuse for eating meat. Oh, because this is where I get my B12. Like you said, the easiest, the simplest thing to do is take a B12 supplement, like 5,000 microgram tablet once a week. It'll cost you like $13 for a year, and you're absolutely golden. And the good news is there's no known toxicity. You can't overdose on B12, and there you have it. But other than B12, you should be able to get every vitamin, every mineral from plants, because plants are the mother source for everything, right? Whether it's your protein, like most people don't know, you know, your 8 essential amino acids, they all originate from plants. If an animal has protein, it's because they got it from plants. If a lion has it, it got it from the antelope. They got it from the grass that it was grazing on. You know, your carbohydrates, meat. Meat has no carbohydrate. Meat has two things. It's got fat and it's got protein. It's got a weak protein, and it's got, you know, your, just to go through the list really quickly, red meat on average is about 40% saturated fat. Your chicken on average, your leanest chicken breast, 32% saturated fat. Your eggs are 30% saturated fat. Your wild caught salmon is 20% saturated fat. You know, butter is 62% saturated fat. We don't need to go there. And you don't have, and meat doesn't have our body's primary fuel source, which is carbohydrates. So plants, you've got a plant-friendly source of protein. You've got essential omega-3 fatty acids in the perfect balance. And you've got unprocessed carbohydrates, your body's primary fuel source. You got, you know, all the vitamins. You got all, except for B12, you got all the vitamins and vitamin D. You got all the vitamins, you got all the minerals, you got the antioxidants, you got the phytonutrients, you got the fiber, and you got water. So, I mean, so the only thing where I'm going with all this, James, the only thing that I can hypothesize why you might have felt a little weak is really one of two things. One, your body just hadn't adjusted yet. It hadn't adjusted to this, you know, new, cleaner way of eating. You know, when you cut out certain things from your, that you've been doing for your whole life, there's going to be some residual side effects, right? Like you try and, you know, kick coffee, you're going to feel like shit. You're going to, you know, you're going to be, feel fatigued. You're going to be grumpy. You're going to be irritable for probably a good 10 days. I mean, imagine trying to give up animal protein, you know, all your processed refined foods and your dairy products in one fell swoop. So that could have been part of it. The other that I find, especially with people that are active and athletes, is you're not consuming enough calories. And I typically find that I have to eat 30% more food to take in the same amount of calories. Now, for many people, that's a wonderful thing, right? You mean to tell me I can eat, you know, 30% more food and it's the same amount of calories? And the answer is yes. But you know, if you're really active and you're athletic, you really got to make a concerted effort to make sure you're eating enough. And so I just, you know, I you should see the size of my breakfast bowl in the morning. I put, you know, a banana, a kiwi, a grapefruit, frozen mango chunks on there. I pile it with, you know, a whole bunch of unsweetened almond milk or oat milk. You should see the size of my, you know, just my dinner bowl, my lunch bowls. I mean, it's staggering, but I'm also, you know, I'm training at least an hour every day and I'm pretty active. And when you eat this way too, you actually, you have a higher metabolism. When you're eating predominantly protein and carbohydrates, you know, and your fat intake is more around 15%. That protein and the carbohydrate, you, in order to like basically convert those, metabolically, your body, uses up almost 25% of those calories to metabolically convert those. Whereas with fat, your body, only uses like 2%. So it's just it's kind of a different, metabolic kind of requirement that you're putting on your body when you're eating this way. So I'll stop for a sec.
Yeah, no, that was great. And one thing that I've come across now that I hadn't then, and we can actually talk about this too, was sleep deprivation. I spoke to Dr. Kirk Parsley, interviewed him last week, He's a Navy SEAL, retired, and went to med school and then came back as a Navy SEAL's doctor and was seeing the same kind of things, you know, just fatigue in general in these young rock stars. And, you know, apart from diet, another huge factor was the fact they weren't sleeping, which is definitely, you know, something that plagues us in police, fire, and EMS.
So, yeah. No, I mean, I listen, you know, one of the reasons why I decided to leave Station One is because I was so sleep deprived. I mean, we're in the heart of downtown, and you remember I told you there, you got two engines there, you got a truck company, and you got an ambulance all running out of that station. That tone was going off all night long, and I was on an engine. And as you probably know, you know, the majority of our calls as firefighters are medical emergencies. And so I was up typically 3-4 times between midnight and 7 a.m. And we were, I'm talking, you got to get up. You got to get on the unit. You got to, you know, you got to have your A game, right? When you're dealing with patients. And so you go home and anyway, it was too much. And so that's why I went to fire station too. You know, little did I know I wouldn't be sleeping. I almost was not sleeping just as much because we had the University of Texas campus, and we just had a lot of incidences that you know, over there with when you've got a population density of close to 60,000, you know, 19 to 21-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
And you got alcohol involved. Yeah, listen, I mean, that sleep deprivation is brutal. You know, we saw some pretty, you know, pretty, dark, disturbing calls that, you know, it's tough to get out of your brain, and you just figure out a way to, you know, deal with it the best that you can. But in the beginning of my first book, The Engine 2 Diet, I talk about this horrendous fire that we made, and it shook me to the core. I mean, I was never the same after that fire. I mean, it was like this thing was as ugly and as scary as anything I've ever encountered. And, you know, the civilian perished, you know, burned. We had two firefighters that were burned really, really badly. I was up in one of the windows, helping one of the firefighters get out of the second story apartment complex. One of the firefighters had almost 70% of his body had third degree burns. The other one was maybe 20%. And, you know, I just looked into this inferno and felt the heat. My face piece basically cracked and splintered. My shield on my helmet melted. I got some burns on my neck and my ear, but I didn't even go in the room. I was just there basically kind of manning the ladder and helping these guys get out through the window. And all of a sudden I was like, this is some real ugly shit right here. And to this day, you know, wild noises really affect me. I jump, I get startled easily. So there's definitely a little bit of, you know, PTSD that afflicted me after that fire.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what the Dark Side Project I'm trying to achieve by that is every single person I've interviewed that's in our professional military or, you know, anything related to where you're going to see people in the darkest hour carries those things around. And then obviously the factor that comes in then is how you cope. Do you choose good coping mechanisms, bad coping mechanisms? And, you know, this brings it back around to the nutrition is, you know, one of the pillars of health, as Kurt Parsi talks about, is, you know, what you eat, the state of your body. He said the one area that you should neglect the least is sleep, but we don't have a choice. That's the one area that we can't control. And I don't think there are many quiet fire departments on the planet anymore. You know, we're asked to do more with less. And,
it's true.
Yeah. So I think it's so important to do, you know, exactly what you're saying and make your plate, you know, if you subscribe to the meat or no meat, whatever the choice is, at least make sure that your plate looks like a rainbow of different colors, and you know, that will give you the different nutrients that you need.
Yeah. No, I mean, eating a clean, wholesome, you know, plant-based diet is, it just gives you a foundation for so many other things in life. Because let's face it, you know, as you know, as I know, as, you know, your listeners know, life is not easy, right? I mean, it is, you know, I mean, life is, it's so amazing. It's so beautiful, but it also can be so absolutely brutal and antagonizing and hard and difficult. And if you, at your foundation, right, you are fueling your body. I mean, the most intimate relationship that any of us has with anything in our lives is food, right? It's what nourishes us. It's what sustains us. It's what really makes us, you know, makes us us. And if you're doing the right thing in that department, it makes everything else that much easier. So why not give yourself the opportunity to, you know, deal with everything that life throws at you and have your health, right? And have health, you know, have happiness, and just have a really just solid foundation underneath you. And for me, so much of that is rooted in, you know, what you're eating and how healthy you are.
Yeah. And I have to preface all this, I know I'm eating a little bit of meat now and I'm constantly self-experimenting and, you know, we'll probably try and swing back the other way again. But two things. Firstly, when I switched to the plant-based, I felt amazing. And then secondly, I did a 3-day juice cleanse. And I think juicing is fantastic, but I think it's great more to use almost like a multivitamin rather than do it for a full-on, you know, weight loss program, just because I think the human body is supposed to have, you know, fiber and those kind of things. But short-term, to kind of hit the reset button, I found that amazing. And I drink coffee and alcohol, so the first couple of days were kind of rough. But after, I was off both for a while and really did feel amazing. So there's no question that you know, you do feel fantastic. And the weakness, like I said, that was after quite a while. We were on it, I think we were plant-based for probably well over a year. And it may be that I wasn't eating enough calories, because I was, you know, exercising. I was doing martial arts. I was training at the fire station, you know, as well as being a dad and a husband and everything else. So I think that's something that I will go back and relook at and see if I can up my pure consumption and just be more strict as well, because I'm sure everyone listening is thinking, well, that sounds like a lot of, you know, work, a lot of preparation. And the bottom line is, yeah, it is. But how important is food and health to you? You know, you're going to have to do some more preparation. You're going to have to learn to cook, you know, and
but, so, yeah, no, but let me add that this can be as time consuming or untime consuming as you make it. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years, and the reason why I've been doing it so long is because I make it drop dead simple, right? You know, on the weekends, I'll get in there with my wife and we'll make some nice, you know, creative, fun dishes. But during the week, it is simple, basic stuff. It's oatmeal in the morning. It is, you know, sweet potato with maybe some chopped up kale and pinto beans and a salsa on top. It's rice and beans for night rice and beans for dinner, or it's a soup that we made on the weekend that we can just basically parcel out, you know, over the week. It's a pizza that we can make in 10 minutes, right? You know, for those of your listeners that don't know, you know, I've got a line of Engine 2 food products that's available only at Whole Food Market stores. They actually, you know, own the rights to the brand, but we got a whole grain pizza crust that you just, you know, pile on your marinara sauce and all the veggies you want, and throw it in the oven, and it's done in 10 minutes. So we typically, James, we do a pizza night, we do a burger night, we do a big old muscular salad night, we do a pasta night, we do a soup night, and then we usually do like a macaroni and not cheese, or a sweet potato lasagna night. And my kids, I got a 2, 7, and 9-year-old, and they will help us make some of these dishes. We have found the best way to get your kids to eat this way is to have them help you make the food so that they're touching with their hands and they're, you know, intimately acquainted with it. And man, it's not a lot of work. It doesn't have to be a lot of work. And like anything in life, you know, you start doing it, it becomes second nature and you're like, oh man, this is a breeze, right? Ain't no thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree completely. I think, you know, I found that very thing, but I think if people are used to peeling back a piece of cellophane, throwing something in the microwave and it's done, it's going to take a little bit more effort than that to do it. But I think that's a good thing. Like just like you're saying, being present, being mindful, turning off your Facebook when you're eating, you know, paying attention to each mouthful that you put in your mouth. I think that all adds to the whole process and experience of eating again, being around the fire station table and talking and joking and, you know, enjoying the fruits of your labor when you have, you know, put something together, whether it's simple or something a little bit more complex. So, and just touching, so your engine too, let's talk about that quickly. So after the success with JR, was that when you decided to put a book together and kind of put it out there to the world?
You know what? No, actually, yes, that is true. But I had no intention of ever writing a book. We got inundated with a lot of press and media over the course of about an 8-month period. And then I got asked by some literary agents and publishing houses to write a book. And I thought about it long and hard. And at some point I decided, you know what, I'm going to give this a whirl. And I spent 2 years writing the book. I did a pilot study. I was able to gather about 62 guinea pigs, half were men, half were women, to do this for 28 days. And I got a medical director on board and I got a laboratory on board, and we weighed people in before, we did blood pressure, we did a lipid panel with total cholesterol and LDL and HDL and triglycerides and fasting glucose, and then we did it again on the back end 28 days later, and James, the results were just like amazing. They were just nothing short of amazing. And so it, you know, that really was the basis and the foundation of the book. But in the book, I talk about kind of my story, my history, my father's research, you know, the different chronic Western diseases that are taking down Americans. And I go through each one, from heart disease to cancer to Alzheimer's to diabetes, and how they're basically all either preventable, reversible, or we can greatly slow them down by eating a whole food plant-based diet. And then the second half of the book is all a bunch of, you know, delicious recipes. So that book came out in 2009.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think that should be a staple for every fire department. I really do. I mean,
well, you know what? It's amazing how many firefighters around the country have, over the last 7 years since I wrote the book, have emailed me, you know, just with their wild success stories. So it's happening. You know, there's more and more firehouses, I think, that are dropping the meat and the fried potatoes and, you know, that kind of toxic way of, you know, of eating, the way firehouses do, and turning a new leaf, a plant strong leaf.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing I want to touch on as well, and this all ties into it as well. Well, firstly, just to respond to that, I know Orange County, Florida, my brother's there, Station 30, I know, did a challenge and they went Engine 2, Plant Strong. And I can't remember the exact amount, but I want to say collectively for the crew, it was something like 100 pounds they lost. And they did the same thing. They did blood work before, blood work after. And I know everyone I've seen from that crew is still the same shape as they were after the challenge. So, I mean, I've seen the effects personally, you know, in my own blood work, you know, when I went Plant Strong and then with my peers as well. So that was incredible. But I want to take it one step further. And this is an area that I think a lot of people are scared to address. And that's using plant-based and or juice to treat cancer. I can say right now, if I was diagnosed, I would check myself into one of the clinics that does the Gershom method and go that route. I have seen many, many of, you know, of our peers get some sort of disease, be given the chemo, and either have a horrendous quality of life and then pass away, or, you know, have the crap kicked out of them chemically, and then, you know, sometimes come back for it, beat it. Now, this is a sweeping generalization. Obviously, there's some that's going to work well for, others that it may not. Some might be as simple as surgery, just removing, you know, a tumor, and then you're good. Obviously, that would be another alternative. But with your dad's work, with your work, what you've seen around the world, you know, since you got into this area, what are your views on using food to treat and reverse cancer?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, you look at the research that Dean Ornish has done at the University of California, San Francisco, and he was able to show in 3 months, taking men that had different kind of, were in different stages of prostate cancer, that they were able to either slow down, halt, or reverse their prostate cancers and the size of them just through a whole food plant-based diet, meditation, and group support. And by association, he's been able to show this with breast cancer. But Colin Campbell wrote the China study will tell you that, close to 80% of, these cancers that are, you know, Americans are coming down with are lifestyle created cancers, right? Whether it's, breast cancer, prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, ovarian cancer, large part pancreatic cancer. And as far as, you know, food to, reverse cancer, I've heard, you know, obviously the science, like from Dean Ornish. I've heard stories about the Gerson Institute, I think you mentioned earlier, right?
Yes.
Dr. McDougall has had different patients that have had stage 4, for example, like breast cancers, and they've gone in full remission just by, eating a whole food plant-based diet. But I personally don't have any experience with that, with cancer. And I don't know if my father does either. So that's certainly something that I can only speak to, through, you know, other people, not myself.
Right. Yeah. I think it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had, though. There's no question that the very basic theory behind the fact that you've got a weakened state, you know, already, and a cancer growing, and then you crush that body with more pharmaceuticals, you have to question the logic. You know, I'm not saying, like I said, that it's completely wrong. It's just a conversation, because right now, radiation or chemotherapy are really the only two options that most people consider. And I have seen through, you know, the Gerson method, and I forget his name, Jason from Super Juice Me has a clinic in Portugal, and people go there and you've got these amazing success stories. But again, they're not out there in the general consciousness. Now, cancer is a word for, you know, a huge spectrum of disorders and diseases. Some clearly are genetic. I mean, you get these poor infants and young children that get this, that, you know, probably haven't had a chance to abuse through lifestyle. But, rather than focusing on those that may well be out of that control, the sleep deprivation, the poor food, the lack of exercise, if those are triggers for a lot of these cancers, then I can see how that would be something that would be reversible if you took the inflammatory foods and the poor lifestyle choices away. You retired from the fire department. What made you make that decision?
So I got So I retired from AFD, the Austin Fire Department, in September of 2009. And my book had been out for about 5-6 months. And it caught the attention of John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, who follows a whole food plant-based diet. And he asked me if I would consider partnering with Whole Foods as part of their healthy eating initiative to raise awareness about Whole Foods team members and customers and communities eating healthier. And I really saw this as a once in a lifetime opportunity to, you know, take helping people and saving lives to a whole nother level. And so I left the Austin Fire Department and I've been with kind of Whole Foods now for almost a little over 7 years.
Okay. Now, when you retired and you weren't up all night running these calls, did you notice a big difference when you started sleeping in your own bed every night?
You know what? That's a great question. And the answer is I didn't. I mean, listen, yes. But the reality is I also then had kids, right? I had my first kid in 2007. The next was 2009. And I was up a lot during the night with my kids, right? One of them was pretty colicky. And I was like, I can't get a break. But it was nice. You know, listen, when you just have to stumble from your bed to the crib as opposed to, you know, getting out of your bed, sliding down a pole. And so both the fire stations that I was at in Austin, 1 and 2, both had fire poles. You know, so I got very, very good at going down that fire pole.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's different when you don't have to, you know, drive a unit or help somebody out. So, but yes, it's great sleeping in your own bed and getting to stay in the house for the night.
Right. Yeah. Because I know you get a lot of retirees, usually the ones that have made healthier choices when they retire as well. But you know, they come visit the station after a year and they look 10 years younger just from catching up on that god-awful sleep deprivation.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. And then the other question is, so I had Sebastian Junger on the show a couple of weeks ago now. He wrote Tribe and has a great outlook on one of the big causes of PTSD, which is having the tribe for us, you know, the fire department. He focuses on the military and then leaving it, and that's when a lot of people struggle with the PTSD. Did you have any issues after you left the station as far as you know, depression or that kind of thing?
You know what? No, I've been pretty lucky with that. You know, depression and getting too dark. I think, well, you know, one of the things that's really helped me out is I've always loved training, and you know, you can. Exercise is one of the greatest antidepressants that are out there. You know, get those endorphins going, you know, get the blood flowing, get those muscles pumping. And I swim with a master's program. So I typically am always socializing, you know, I'm with people, you know, I work now, in an office environment with different teams. I've got my family, I've got my kids. So I was lucky in that, you know, when I get down, when I get darker, a little bit depressed, it's more because I feel overwhelmed with everything that I have on my plate, as opposed to something else. But, you know, listen, I can tell you that I dearly miss the guys at the fire station, you know, that whole fraternity, that tribe. You know, sharing everything with those guys, going on crazy, amazing calls, going on the ugly calls, and then how you deal with all of it. There's nothing like it. I don't know another profession that's like it. And I feel so fortunate that I got to have 12 years as a firefighter.
Yeah, it's a great job. And you touched on a great point as well. Heard from pretty much everyone that I've had so far is that the best coping mechanism for that is to really have a full life, but certainly exercise is pretty much, if you could name one thing aside from eating well, would be exercise, and not just standing there on a treadmill just mindlessly plodding along, but having something you're passionate about you can throw yourself into. Yeah. So a couple of quick fire questions before we go. So what about a book and or a movie or documentary that you would recommend to people?
Well, obviously, you know, you've mentioned it about 10 times. Forks Over Knives is great. There's going to be one that's coming out here in probably 7 to 8 months. that I highly recommend that every firefighter watches, and it's going to be called The Game Changers. And we are going to dismantle this whole notion that real men and real women eat meat. And we are going to show world-class athletes, visionary scientists, everyday humans, everyday heroes, that in their arena, as opposed to just a bunch of talking heads, doing their thing. And I think we're going to cast a really nice light on the power of plants and how so many of us have been bamboozled and hoodwinked, just like we were with the Marlboro man for so many years, realizing that, you know what, meat is not where it's at. It's a real problem. It's not only a problem for our health, it's a problem for the health of this planet, and it's a problem as far as, you know, the fact that we're killing close to 60 to 70 billion animals a year for purposes that are doing nothing to help our health or the planet's health. So The Game Changers, I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, fantastic. I'll definitely be looking out for that. And to everyone listening, Forks Over Knives is life-changing. Super Juice Me is another great one. Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. There's some fantastic food documentaries out there that really just tell the other side of the story. We get the one side in the grocery store every day, so it's good to go outside your comfort zone and educate yourself.
Totally. Hey, and before we hop, and I got to go. I got a 4 o'clock meeting I got to prepare for here. But James, you know, I got a new book that is coming out in 12 days, and it's called The Engine 2 7-Day Rescue Diet, where I basically ask people to live this lifestyle for 7 days. If you can, do before and after biometrics so you can see what happens in 7 days. It's just another entry point into this lifestyle. But the second half of the book is I lay out for you what to eat exactly for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, using bowls because they're so easy, and every bite is reassuringly the same. They're transportable and you know, minimal cleanup. But we're offering a free 7-day challenge. If your listeners go to engine2.com, you can sign up for it. You'll get daily emails, videos, and you can join the designated standalone Facebook challenge page with probably will end up being 30 or 40,000 other participants. And it should be a game changer for a lot of people this 7 days. So anyway, couldn't be happier about this new book and the number of people that are going to benefit from it.
Fantastic. Well, I will put a link to the book and a link to the website as well, and all your other work and also your father's work as well, so people can delve down those rabbit holes. But thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. Like I said, please tell your father as well that he changed my life along with you. And I hope that this will help extend both your work to the men and women that put their lives on the line for this country and countries around the world.
Well, thank you, James. And thank you for what you are doing, all your great work. You are an inspiration with your different projects. And anyway, you should be super, super happy with all the good you're doing. Thank you for this.
Well, thank you, too. I hope we can all be part of the big puzzle and, you know, make a difference in this amazing life that we have. So I will let you. Thank you. I'll let you go now so you can get to your 4 o'clock. And you take care, and hopefully we'll touch base again soon.
All right. Peace, Engine 2. Play it strong. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.